I usually felt a little surge of pleasure as I stepped off the elevator into the cavernous former warehouse in the East Village we'd rented as the office of Juice Software, the startup I'd co-founded in 2000. That day, I just felt stressed. The engineers had worked nights and weekends on an early beta version of our product, which would be ready in a week. The sales team had gotten 30 big-name customers lined up for beta testing. If those customers were using our product, we'd be able to raise another round of funding. If not, we'd run out of money in 6 months. There was one blocker. Me. The night before, one of our angel investors, Dave Rue, had told me he thought our pricing was all wrong. Think about the last time you bought a used car, one that costs less than $10,000. Now think about the guy who sold it to you. That's who your salespeople will be. That's who will represent you in the market. I knew in my gut Dave was right, but I couldn't go to my sales team or my board and change everything just based on a gut feeling. I needed to sit down and do some analysis, fast. I'd cleared my calendar for meetings for the morning so I could do just that. I'd gotten only a few steps into the office when a colleague suddenly ran up. He needed to talk right away. He had just learned that he might need a kidney transplant, and he was completely freaked out. After an hour and 2 cups of tea, he seemed calmer. I walked toward my desk, past an engineer whose child was in the ICU. Must check in. "How'd your son do last night?" I asked. He hadn't improved. And as he told me how the night had gone, we both had tears in our eyes. I convinced him to leave the office and go and take care of himself for an hour before returning to the hospital. I left his desk drained, passing by our quality assurance manager. His child had better news. She'd just received the highest score in the entire state on a standardized math test. He wanted to talk about it. I felt emotional whiplash as I jumped from sympathy to celebration. By the time I got back to my desk, I had no time or emotional reserves to think about pricing. I cared about each of these people, but I also felt worn out, frustrated that I couldn't get any real work done. Later that day, I called my CEO coach, Leslie Koch, to complain. "Is my job to build a great company?" I asked. "Or am I really just some sort of emotional babysitter?" Leslie, a fairly opinionated ex-Microsoft executive, could barely contain herself. "This is not babysitting," she said. "It's called management, and it is your job." Every time I feel I have something more important to do than listen to people, I remember Leslie's words. "It's your job." I've used Leslie's line on dozens of new managers who've come to me after a few weeks in their new role, moaning that they feel like babysitters or shrinks. We undervalue the emotional labor of being the boss. That term is usually reserved for people who work in the service or health industry. Psychiatrists, nurses, doctors, waiters, flight attendants. But as I will show in the pages to come, this emotional labor is not just part of the job. It's the key to being a good boss.
Thank you for listening to this clip provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.